On the line, Rabbi Daniel Bider. He is the one of the rabbis at Or Sameach here in Johannesburg. Recently came to South Africa. Shame. And now he's in lockdown. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel locked down.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So there you are, because you could be absolutely anywhere in the world. But having recently come to South Africa, you've chosen South Africa for a lockdown. That's given you a lot of time to think. And you and I were chatting, and I thought it was some of your thoughts around the lessons of COVID-19 were worth talking about. Last time we spoke, you spoke about the fact that COVID-19 has almost given us a global permission to reintroduce the word God again into our conversations, whereas the word was verboten in many parts of the world and in many societies. It's crept back because it's hard not to see that. And that thought remained with me. You and I have had a number of subsequent conversations, and I wanted to get your thoughts on other lessons of COVID-19.
It prompts all sorts of thoughts. One particular idea, which I think we discussed recently, which I think is useful and powerful, is the fact that we're all looking for signs of something big having changed. We all feel quite moved when we hear about the fish swimming again in the Venetian canals, and I saw a few days ago there were some lions who felt comfortable falling asleep in a road in the Kruger Game Reserve, when I think normally the roads are the domain of the vehicles and the lions know their place. And there seems to be some kind of turning back, returning to, you know, things returning to the way they should be, the earth healing, etc. This is all quite nebulous and enigmatic and really difficult to get a finger on in some senses. But there is a certain line of thought which I thought was quite meaningful, which I think resonated with you as well, as I recall.
Yes. Yeah, so develop that thought further.
Yeah. So we have a tradition that many, many years ago, the world was subjected to this, there was the Diluvian Age. There was the age when the world was flooded, mankind had got it all wrong. God felt there was a major kind of rebooting, as it were, that was necessary. And there was the flood and the world started again. And not too long after that, there was another period when the world looked like it was all going in the wrong direction. There was the episode with the Tower of Babel, Migdal Bavel, as it's known in Hebrew, when a group of people, pretty much everyone who inhabited the ancient world, according to our tradition, got together and decided that we need to build this tower to, there's a few explanations as to what the reason was for the tower. Was it to protect themselves from another flood? Was it to, as it were, go up and fight God? But the general idea is that people got together and wanted to take the world in the wrong direction once again, and God had a way of dealing with that.
Right.
The way in which he dealt with that, according to our tradition, is that he, instead of the one language that, which everyone spoke at that particular stage in time, Hebrew, God created a situation whereby everyone was speaking different languages. And it's difficult to really plumb the depths of what that means, moving from a situation where everyone's speaking the same language to a situation where people start speaking different languages. And according to our tradition, what happened was, because they started speaking different languages, all hell broke loose on this building site. They were building this tower, and one guy asked the other guy for some straw, the other guy gave him some cement. The first guy was extremely offended about that and decided to kill the guy who'd given him the wrong thing. And that can only be understood on the basis that there's far more to language than simply using different words to say the same thing. There must have been some real feeling that there was some major misunderstanding going on there. So as I was discussing with you, the idea which I wanted to develop is that language is not just a different way of saying the same thing, it's a completely different way of looking at the world. And we see this manifesting itself in a very simple example. Well, there's a couple of simple examples. One example would be the word for key. So the word for key in English is key, funnily enough, which I think I don't know what the origin of the word key is. But in Hebrew, it's interesting, the word for key in Hebrew is mafteach, which comes from the word poteach, to open. Mm-hmm. The word for key in German, do you know the word for key in German, Howard?
Schlüssel, something like that, isn't it?
Correct, you're through to the next round, very good. Mm-hmm. Was that without talking to a friend? You worked that one out as well, very good.
That's Schlüssel having German grandparents.
Key in German. Yeah. Schlüssel comes from the word schließen, to close. Mm-hmm. So Germans are saying that a key comes from the word schließen, to close, and in Hebrew it's the word mafteach from the word poteach, to open. So to keys open or to keys close? Interesting, right? What are they there for, keys? What's the
even in Khoza, actually, it means it's to close.
Saying Khoza, it's to close. Yeah. It's the same as in German.
Yes. Wow, interesting.
So, and that's obviously quite reflective of what?
It might be reflective of some deep underlying philosophy behind the language, some way of looking at the world. You know, is this a culture where we look at opening things up? Is this a culture where we look at closing things? I don't want to point fingers and say this is a very expansive culture and this is a culture which looks to minimize and lock things up. I wouldn't dare do such a thing with 100,000 listeners, but who knows? I don't know. There's a whole different way of looking at the world. And there's another example, actually, which I think is important. It was told to me by a friend in Israel. So that thing which we put in a baby's mouth to keep it quiet, I can just think of three cultures who used completely different ways of referring to that thing. So in English, in England, the England I grew up in, we call that the dummy, the thing you put in the baby's mouth to keep it quiet.
Yeah, we call it a dummy as well.
You call it a dummy?
Mm-hmm, we do indeed.
Okay, fine. Now, in America, they don't call it a dummy, they call it?
Mm-hmm, pacifier.
Pacifier, right. And in Hebrew, it's actually called a motzetz. Motzetz means someone who sucks, someone who's sucking. It comes from the word to suck. So in the Hebrew language, the way that this thing is
an action
viewed is what the user is doing with it. Mm. In the American culture, this is viewed as what is the purpose of this thing? Why are you using it? Is there to pacify or to attempt to pacify the baby? And in English, we call it a dummy. Why do we call it a dummy? So the jury is out. Some people think it's because that's what you look like when you use these things. And the real understanding actually is probably that a dummy means fake. It's a fake breast. The baby's looking for its mother's breast, but in the meantime, until it finds that, we'll give it this dummy, this fake. So do we look at totally different ways of looking at the same object? Should we look at what you do with it, the Israeli approach, motzetz, you're sucking it? Should we look at what it's there for, what the purpose of it is, pacifier? Or should we look at what it kind of replicates, the English stroke South African approach? Three very different ways of looking at the same thing, which just illustrates that languages are actually not just different ways of saying the same thing. They're really very different ways of looking at the world, which I think is very interesting in the light of what we started off talking about, this whole COVID-19 lockdown, healing, etc. Because this is what I wanted to share with you. We've lived in a very fragmented world where pretty much every family, every person, every individual's got their own different set of concerns, worries, anxieties, hopes, aspirations, etc. That's the way it's been since time immemorial. And for once, we see a kind of return to this pre-Tower of Babel world where actually the whole world's thinking the same thing. The different languages mean that everyone started thinking differently because that's what language means. Language means you're not just using a different word to say the same thing. You're actually thinking differently. I think we've illustrated that point through the use of dummies, pacifiers, motzetzes, and keys and schlissels. And now we're looking at a world where actually pretty much the whole world, and I'm not sure if this has ever happened, ever, the whole world has got the same anxiety. The whole world is thinking the same thing. The whole world is thinking lockdown, COVID, scared, when it ends, etc. And I think that's major. Absolutely. I know we've had world wars and situations like that, but they're not really comparable. This is the time that everyone wants the same result pretty much, and everyone's got the same anxiety. And that's an incredibly uniting thing. Is it healing? I'm not sure if that's a healing thing, but it's actually something quite solid for us to focus on. If we're looking for something in our tradition, or even if you want to look at it in a more sort of general spiritual sense, some kind of uniting feature in the world, this is an incredibly uniting thing. And I think that matters, and
I think
it's important,
amazing.
And it's noteworthy.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely awesome. Even during any war, people are on different sides wanting very, very different things. Here, for once, we are all standing on the same side and fighting this invisible enemy that's strangely enough is uniting us all in language and desire. Very, very interesting point. And thank you for taking the time to share it with us. That's Rabbi Daniel Bider. Really fascinating indeed.